Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, believing growth and productivity of Florida depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust encourages all businesses to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital staff members. More information is at abletrust.org. And from Florida Tax Watch Prudential Productivity Awards, recognizing and rewarding Florida's innovative state employees for their cost-saving ideas on June 24th in Miami. Sponsored by Prudential, the Florida Lottery, and AvMed Health Plans. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
This week on Capitol Report, we'll look back on a tragic week in Florida history.
Just shout what it is that you're feeling right now. So one, two, three.
Love!
Also, as part of our Orlando tragedy coverage, we'll hear from one young woman who literally looked into the face of death.
With my face under the stole, looking, I could see him put down his machine gun.
We'll also examine how one event can engender unity and conflict, prayers for peace, and demands for war. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. We start this week's special coverage with a sonic portrait of how Floridians across the state have been uniting in a show of support for victims and community members impacted by the devastating attack in an Orlando club. Regan McCarthy prepared this audio montage.
Edward Sotomayor, Jr. Standing on the bar.
All I heard was bang, 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 bang. Bang, bang, bang. And when I got out of the bar, it was like, get back, get back, get back.
Ivan Ortiz Riera. Peter O. Gonzalez.
When the guy next to me got shot, I dropped and I crawled my way out. That's how I fled. I wasn't going to get up because I did not want to get hit by a stray bullet.
A. J. Justice. Daryl Roman Burt II.
These lives have been lost. But they will never be forgotten. And that's why I have a challenge for you today and for the rest of your days. I want you to pledge to fight for equality and social justice, to encourage those who express ill towards anyone to do otherwise, to promote empathy, and to be understanding and compassionate of those that are different from you.
Luis Daniel Winston Leon. Mercedes Marisol Flores.
If you can make this pledge with me tonight, please say Orlando Strong.
Orlando Strong!
Gilberto Ramon Silva Menendez. Simon Adrian Carrillo Fernandez.
Walk out of those doors tonight and make a vow to allow these names to not be lost in vain.
Enrique El Rios Jr. Miguel Angel Arato, Javier Jorge Reyes, Joel Rayon Aliwa.
Just shout what it is that you're feeling right now. So one, two, three.
Love!
Corin James Connell, Juan P. Rivera Velasquez, Luis Dan Connell.
Human drama was everywhere that night. Patients Carter and her friend had made it out of Pulse, but as the shots rang out in the night, they realized a third friend was missing. Together, they went back inside. Amy Green from member station WMFE in Orlando reports on what happened next.
The two found their friend among the chaos and rushed with other clubgoers to a bathroom where they huddled in a handicapped stall.
The gunman entered the bathroom and was shooting his machine gun. So we're all like scrambling around in the bathroom, screaming at the top of our lungs when he was in there for the first time. And then you know, people are getting hit by bullets, like, blood is everywhere. And then there was a moment where he stopped shooting in the bathroom. And that's when everyone looked around, and that's when I first realized that my leg was shot.
The friends were on vacation and just had arrived from Philadelphia. They had discovered Pulse during an internet search for Orlando's best clubs.
We were just all having, like, the night that we dreamed of going out. Like, literally, it was the best. It was the most beautiful bonding experience like any three girls could have on their first night out on vacation.
In the bathroom stall, one friend was shot in her side. The other was shot in her arm. They huddled with other clubgoers for hours awaiting their rescue. They heard the gunman tell 911 dispatchers he wanted the United States to stop bombing his country. The American-born man's parents are from Afghanistan. He pledged allegiance to ISIS and spoke in Arabic. Then he turned his attention toward the hostages. He asked whether any blacks were among the group. Carter, who is black, was too terrified to answer, but another man spoke up.
And he said, yes, there are about six or seven of us. And the gunman responded back to him saying that, you know, I don't have a problem with black people. This is about my country. You guys suffered enough.
At one point, the shooter's gun jammed.
He was like, damn, like it jammed. So with my face under the stall, looking, I could see him put down his machine gun and try to, and you could hear him trying to click and fix his handgun.
Suddenly, the hostages heard a series of explosions. Authorities outside were trying to breach the club's wall and rescue them. But some things the gunman had said, presumably to himself, led Carter and the other hostages to believe others involved in the rampage had blown themselves up. Authorities say the gunman alone was responsible for the attack.
It sounded as if he was communicating with other people who were involved with it. He made a statement that if the police come in, they're going to attack, but it's okay, we got the snipers outside. Whoever he spoke to, and, you know, some police officers, maybe he was just deranged, maybe he was talking to himself.
There was another explosion. The gunman backed into the stall where the hostages were.
And I could see his feet, like, scooting back as he heard the police outside. And the last thing that I heard before the police said, you know, move away from the walls, because obviously they were about to bust through again. He said, hey, you, to someone on the floor inside the bathroom, and shot them, shot another person, and then shot another person.
That last victim shielded Carter with her body, saving her life. She doesn't know who she was. Finally, authorities breached the wall. They engaged in a shootout with the gunman, killing him. For the second time that night, Carter made it out of Pulse. She had rescued her missing friend, but her other friend, Akira Murray, would be among the dead.
Akira was the life of the party, literally. And everybody loved her. Everyone just adored her.
She just had turned 18. Amy Green in Orlando.
Still to come on Capitol Report, how to talk to the kids when even grown-ups can't find the words to explain the horror.
There's one thing to know about what happened in a broad stroke. There's another to be exposed to the tears and the distress and the agony.
Florida Muslims are weighing in on the tragedy in Orlando.
In the month of Ramadan, a month of mercy, we stand strong together, united, for love and compassion.
And in the midst of so many expressions of shared sorrow and calls for unity, political divides are deepening following last weekend's tragedy. Of course, media coverage of the Orlando shootings has been pervasive and relentless. Experts say very young children shouldn't be exposed to graphic coverage of the Orlando mass slaying, but they also urge the kids get straight answers. Karen Lockhart, a licensed clinical social worker and grief therapist in Tallahassee, talks with Florida Public Radio's Jim Ash about the best way to discuss the tragedy with children.
I know that there's no way to shield them from news this big and this awful. So they're going to hear about it, and they're going to ask questions. What advice would you give to a parent when it comes time to respond? What do you tell a child?
I think that it's important to consider the age of the child and the development of the child. A 12-year-old is going to, or a 14-year-old is going to want to know more and is going to need to know more than, say, a 5 or 6-year-old. You know, 5 and 6-year-olds are very egocentric, so a lot of their concerns are going to be about, am I safe and are you safe as a parent and is, you know, my family safe? I always think that at times like this that it's really critical that parents tell the truth. And the way you tell the truth is going to be different depending on the age of the child. But that your credibility as a parent is dependent upon their trust in you to always tell them the truth.
And fashion that truth in the best way that they can handle it, right?
Correct.
Like you might describe the person who committed this act as a bad person.
Well, I would probably say that this was a person who had was mentally ill. That seems to be the consensus of the community at this point, or law enforcement at this point. And so when people are mentally ill, their brains don't work right, and they can behave very badly, very poorly, make very poor decisions and harm people. There's no need to minimize that, but I think to really try to broaden their view.
I think with the adolescent, the subject of good and evil is going to come up.
Yes.
And is there evil in this world, and does it triumph?
You know, I think that it's a great way at that point to really get them to tell you what they think about good and evil, because this was an evil act. There is no doubt about it. And so I think that being able to draw the contrast between evil behavior and evil acts and good and healthy and helping and acts that we do in service to others, I think kind of comparing that and contrasting that is a good way to help a young person process it.
You know, there's a complicating layer in this tragedy, in that the victims were the LGBT community. Mm-hmm. And you might find yourself struggling to define that.
I think every parent has to decide what their particular views are. And so one family might, for example, say, you know, these were folks who were out with, you know, people of their same gender, and they were having a good time. And then other people might want to go farther and explain, you know, what sexual preference is.
If I was a parent of a child who had suffered trauma or was healing or healed from a past trauma, my reflex would be to say, hey, don't watch the news right now.
There's one thing to know about what happened in a broad stroke. There's another to be exposed to the tears and the distress and the agony that is on 24/7 now on our news cycle. I would not recommend that any child be exposed to that level of agony.
Well, very good. I really appreciate your help.
You're very welcome. I hope this has answered some of your questions.
Florida Public Radio's Jim Ash, talking with Tallahassee clinical social worker and grief therapist Karen Lockhart. Even though some individual Muslims and mosques in Florida have been the target of death threats following the Orlando tragedy, Sasha Cordner reports many of those targets are responding by condemning the attack and vowing solidarity with their fellow Americans.
Middle District of Florida U.S. Attorney Lee Bentley spoke to reporters just days after the tragedy, saying he wants the death threats to Muslims and mosques to stop.
Assistant Special Agent in Charge Ron Hopper commented about the threats that have been made to members of the Muslim community. Making these threats is not only wrong, in most cases, making these threats is illegal. Stop it. Any threats like this detract from what we're doing in law enforcement.
Echoing those sentiments is Rashi Mubarak, who says this is a time for everyone to be united, not separated. She's with Florida's Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE, in Orlando, who spoke to a crowd during a recent vigil.
This right here is a unity message. It's a powerful message that we will not allow fear and hate to divide us.
That message is something Florida's Muslim community is hoping will reach their fellow Americans, but some say comments from Donald Trump haven't helped. Lately, the Republican presumptive presidential nominee has accused American Muslims of not reporting extremist threats, which federal officials say is not true. And he's also renewed his call for what he says is a temporary ban of Muslims from entering the U.S., though the Orlando shooter Omar Mateen was born in America.
I called for a ban after San Bernardino and was met with great scorn and anger. But now, many are saying that I was right to do so.
When we look at Donald Trump, we see him as extreme as ISIS.
That's Ahmed Rashidi, the vice president of the Islamic Center of Tallahassee, speaking at a peace rally he helped organize with other faiths after the San Bernardino attacks in December.
What ISIS is trying to do is divide us from within, divide the country, divide our unity, and make us suspicious of each other. And that's what ISIS is doing. If you look at what Trump is doing, it's not so much different.
But Tallahassee Imam Amro Abdallah says he believes there are many people who are well-educated on Islam and don't share Trump's sentiments. He adds when he first heard of Orlando's mass shooting, he was heartbroken. And Abdallah says there's one thing that unites everyone about the tragedy.
My first thought about what happened in Orlando before knowing who did it is that this is a crime. A criminal committed a crime against innocent people who did nothing to him. After I have discovered that the one who did so is a Muslim, still it is the same. A criminal committed a crime.
And Orlando Imam Muhammad Musri echoed those sentiments on WMFE's Friends Talking Faith program.
I was in tears because the worst nightmare has happened. And I couldn't wrap my head around that right here in my city in Orlando, this many people lost their lives.
Musri says it's also important those who see to condemn all Muslims should look at the facts. He adds that the thousands of mass shootings that have occurred since the September 11th attacks, less than 1% of the attackers were Muslim.
The majority were done by people who are mainstream white Christian, and the religion is not dragged in the mud because people understand that Christianity is not responsible for the action of a person who lost their mind. But when it comes to Islam, nobody wants to blame the killer. They want to blame the religion and blame, you know, all its adherents. And when they do that, they are really perpetuating this myth that Islam alone has this, evil gene, and we need to correct that.
In addition to being skeptical at Mateen's possible terrorist group connections, Musri also says he's not sure the Orlando shooter was even a practicing Muslim. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Kortner.
The guns used to kill at least 49 people in an Orlando gay club were purchased legally. In the wake of the largest mass shooting in recent U.S. history, Kate Payne looks into Florida's gun laws.
Just days before the Orlando shooting, the gunman purchased a handgun and an AR-15 rifle from a local store. Even though he was investigated by the FBI twice as a terror suspect, the gunman was able to buy the weapons legally. The incident has launched Florida into the middle of the national gun debate.
I've got people who we know have been on ISIL websites, living here in the United States, U.S. citizens, and we're allowed to put them on the no-fly list when it comes to airlines. But because of the National Rifle Association, I cannot prohibit those people from buying a gun.
President Barack Obama spoke on PBS NewsHour 2 weeks before the Orlando massacre. Those words seem to foreshadow the deadliest mass shooting in recent U.S. history.
Hey,
How are you?
That's John Hoffman, the owner of DSH Firearms in Tallahassee. The family-run shop is tucked under the oak trees along one of the city's canopy roads. Inside, the place is kind of homey. There's fresh-baked cookies and scented candles and lots of guns.
They're tools that can be used for competition. They can be used for pleasure as a sport, like golfing, you know, they also can be used for self-defense, and they also can be used to put food on the table.
Hoffman does everything by the book. The process to purchase a handgun begins with a form: name, date of birth, address, driver's license. Buyers must answer questions on their criminal history and immigration status. Those answers are confirmed by a federal background check, including a screening of court records. If someone is convicted of a felony or certain domestic violence charges or has ever been committed to a mental hospital, they're denied.
So we call in the background check, we give them all the information, and then once we do, they give us a control number that we put here, the transaction number. We put the date that we received it, and then we file this and keep them forever.
Background checks are required to buy any gun from a licensed dealer. And for handguns, there is a mandatory 3-day waiting period. But if a person already has a concealed weapons permit, they can walk out with their gun the same day. That's also true for long guns. In Florida, there is no mandatory waiting period to purchase shotguns and rifles, including the semi-automatic AR-15. Like many Second Amendment advocates, Hoffman believes guns aren't the problem.
I don't feel like guns are the enemy. I feel like if he really wanted to do something and he couldn't have gotten firearms, he would have found some other way.
According to a Department of Justice analysis, over the last 30 years, homicides were most often committed with handguns, not rifles. But for President Obama and other gun control advocates, it's an issue of access. He believes it's just too easy for suspected terrorists to get a hold of weapons like AR-15s.
This is somebody who is a known ISIL sympathizer, and if he wants to walk in to a gun store or a gun show right now and buy as many weapons as ammo as he can, nothing's prohibiting him from doing that, even though the FBI knows who that person is.
Following the Orlando shooting, Senate Democrats, led by Chris Murphy of Connecticut, held a nearly 15-hour-long filibuster demanding gun control legislation. Florida Senator Bill Nelson joined the effort, reading the words of an Orlando trauma doctor on the chamber floor.
For on June 12, after the worst of humanity reared its evil head, I saw the best of humanity come fighting right back. I never want to forget that night. Dr. Joshua Corsa.
The marathon speeches spurred Republican leadership to action, and the chamber will weigh in on two different gun control measures. One would bar those on federal watch lists from buying firearms, and the other would enact mandatory background checks at gun shows. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
You're listening to Capital Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, that mass shooting at the Orlando gay nightclub has garnered an outpouring of support from around the country and the world. But not every condolence has been welcomed. Lynn Hatter reports on the clash between some gay rights activists and conservatives over an appropriate response.
CNN anchor Anderson Cooper interviewed Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi in Orlando after the shooting. But as Bondi expressed support for the victims, Cooper pressed her on defending the state's now overturned gay marriage ban.
I talked to a lot of gay and lesbian people here yesterday who are not fans of yours and who said that they thought you were being a hypocrite, that you for years have fought. You've basically gone after gay people, said that in court that gay people, simply by fighting for marriage equality, were trying to do harm to the people of Florida, to induce public harm, I believe was the term you used in court. Do you really think you're a champion of the gay community?
Let me tell you, when I was sworn in as Attorney General, I put my hand on a Bible and was sworn to uphold the Constitution of the state of Florida. That's not a law. That was voted into our state constitution by the voters of Florida. That's what I was defending. Mm-hmm. Had nothing to do. I've never said I don't like gay people.
The shooting and the response of some conservatives has struck a chord with many LGBT people who are asking the question, how can those who have opposed us now say they support us?
Well, I hope their comments are genuine, and I'm sure that they do feel sadness for all Americans.
That's State Representative David Richardson, Florida's only openly gay incumbent lawmaker. Richardson is reacting to a statement of support issued in the wake of the shooting by the Florida Family Policy Council. The organization lobbies for traditional marriage and its opposed gay adoptions and is also anti-abortion.
But it doesn't help when they go to Tallahassee and spew hatred, and I really wish that we could just get to a place where everyone can get along and respect the rights of everybody.
You know, the fact that this is a gay bar, it makes no difference. We're all sexually broken at some level. These are human beings that were innocent and had their lives taken.
That's Council President John Stemberger speaking to the Christian network Moody Radio. The council's offices are near the Pulse nightclub, which was attacked early Sunday morning. Stemberger issued a statement Sunday afternoon, but that drew a backlash on social media, mainly for his and his council's anti-LGBT policy agenda. And I asked Stemberger, what did he mean by the words sexually broken?
The point is that we're all broken. We all live in a fallen world. We all have issues that we're struggling with. And so I don't think this is the time for self-righteousness. This is not a time for, the way I view this is, but for the grace of God, I would have been in the nightclub. I would be on the other side of this debate.
And what I will say on that is that if you love me, then really love me. Really show it with actions and not just your words.
Susan Gage is an LGBT activist in Tallahassee.
Certain individuals in government want to talk about how they love us, but their actions don't match the words. And we're tired of that, you know? You really love us? Pass the laws that will protect us.
What she's talking about are bills to protect the LGBT community from discrimination in areas like work and housing. Those measures have failed at both the state and federal level. And that's what it boils down to, showing love. And sometimes actions speak louder than words. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida public radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And please join us again next week for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust. 25 years of connecting businesses with workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to interview and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. AbleTrust.org. And from Florida Tax Watch Prudential Productivity Awards, recognizing and rewarding Florida's innovative state employees for their cost-saving ideas on June 24th in Miami. Sponsored by Prudential, the Florida Lottery, and AvMed Health Plans. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.